Hey, Orthopreneurs, it's Dr. Glenn Krieger here, and let me tell you, the Orthopreneurs 2024 Summit, which is going to be on a Royal Caribbean ship, has taken off. I don't mean literally, but we actually booked an entire ship just for us. We started selling it already, and believe it or not, it's selling out fast. People want to come by themselves. People want to bring their team. People want to bring their families. Remember, there's a kids club there, and there's also an adult-only pool. So you can watch the presentations streaming throughout the whole ship. Imagine sitting in the pool with a drink in your hand, watching someone speak on tips and tricks to help your practice get better while you're sitting knee-deep in a pool with a drink in your hand. Sounds pretty cool, right? Well, you've come to know the kind of meetings we put together, and this one's going to be even more exceptional and even more affordable. Go to opsummit2024.com to sign up now.
My business does well. I'm not worried month to month. If it's a little up month, a little down month, I can see a case where it's like a grandma bringing a kid in because the parents died, and I can be like, we're taking care of your treatment fee, or a foster kid or something like that. I can do more good because my practice does well. I'm a person who loves money. I'm a person who loves doing wonderful things with my family, but I focus on the business aspect of my practice too. And if I didn't do that, my ability to really do the things creatively on the clinical side that I want to do wouldn't be the same.
This is the Orthopreneur Show with Glenn Krieger, talking about the things you never learned in school, like marketing, management, and leadership.
Hello there, everybody, and welcome to another episode of your Orthopreneurs Podcast. I'm Dr. Glenn Krieger. Today, it's going to be fun because we've got somebody I respect immensely, somebody who you probably, many of you know. And for those of you who are true ortho at heart, who just love the practice of clinical ortho, you're going to love talking to my guest today, Dr. Chad Foster. Welcome, Chad.
Thanks, Glenn. It's a pleasure being here, man. It's a real honor. Thank you.
Well, likewise. I'm really thrilled to have you on because you do a lot for our profession. Selflessly, and with what appears to be no agenda whatsoever. And we'll get into that more in a little bit. Tell everybody, you know, in however much time you want to take, how did you end up where you are right now? Give a little background, what have you, and we'll jump from there.
So I practice in Phoenix, Arizona, a very competitive market for dentistry and orthodontics. I grew up in Tempe, Arizona, and I practice in a one doctor, one location practice in Phoenix. And how I got there, you know, coming out of residency, I was very intimidated to come back to Phoenix because there are, you know, big practices set up all over the place, and it was very, very competitive. And so for me, I felt like, you know, who am I to come out and open a practice? You know, I'm not enough. I didn't believe that I had, you know, what it took. It was, I looked around and it just seemed like everybody, or I made the assumption that everybody had it down. And so coming out of residency, I was of the mindset, I want to work in like a pedo ortho or a group practice model or something like that. And I got jobs initially in corporate dentistry as I tried to feel out my own way. So meeting with different pediatric dental practices that were established to see if I could come in and partner with them in some way. And there was just a lot of like frustration through that. Kind of getting into conversations with people that would go a certain direction and then it wouldn't amount to much. And so it was like 5 years that I worked for a lot of different types of corporate practices and associateships and just waiting and a lot of paralysis by analysis. And then finally, after like, you know, things didn't work out in different directions that I would explore, I said, all right, I think I might just buy a practice, by like a, you know, a standalone orthodontic practice. And there was a consultant, Ken Alexander, who I like a lot. He told me about this practice in Phoenix. He said, it's not an A, it's a B, but like, you know, it could be something decent for you. And then like, you know, you maintain that practice, you could start another practice. And so I bought the practice of Clark Jones, who is an amazing orthodontist. He was kind of in retirement mode for a while. And so coming in, it was just like, I burned my boat. And I'm gonna turn this thing around. I have no other option. You know, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do solo orthodontics because in my mind, it was like that has no future, according to what I'm seeing, you know, in the competitive landscape of Phoenix, Arizona. It's group practice models, it's pedo ortho. And then I just had enough, man. And I was like, well, you know, I'm just gonna do this and see how it turns out.
Right on.
And that's where I am now. And a lot of you don't know, like what I tell young orthodontists is, it's very intimidating, you know, whether you're starting up a practice or buying a practice, you don't know what you're capable of. You have no idea what you're capable of until you burn your boat. And then you're like, wow, I can, you know, I'm an introvert and I can force myself to go into a dental office and present to their team and show cases of their team. Or I can force myself to have uncomfortable conversations with people. And something that I tell young orthodontists is so much of life is dictated by your ability to have uncomfortable conversations, whether that's like with team members, the conversations that you're avoiding, or with a referring doctor that doesn't know you, that you're going to be intruding in their practice. They want nothing of you. You know, they're the troll at their front desk that doesn't want you to come into their office. So much of life is just, you know, in your relationships, embracing uncomfortable topics. And if you can do that and you can constantly kind of live in that space in different ways, then you can do it. You can do what seems like insurmountable, or you can just bust down the barriers that you thought existed.
Yeah. The uncomfortable conversation part, man, that is gold you're throwing out there right now, because, you know, it's funny. If you're a decent human being, you hate firing people, right?
Yeah.
Like you just hate firing people. You hate dismissing patients from your practice. Right? You hate doing the things that in your mind appear to be bad things, right?
Yeah.
But I think we'd all agree, you know, you walk into your office and you see your front desk stealing money, literally taking dollar bills, $10 bills, $20 bills, putting it in their pocket and trying to steal it. I think everybody out there, maybe not everybody, but the overwhelming majority of people would have no trouble looking at that person and go, you know, give me back the money, get out of here, right? Like, that's an easy one. But what about the gal or man who's been showing up to your practice on a regular basis? They show up pretty well, but they're just terrible at their job. They're not good. They're never going to be good. They've tried hard. And you feel really bad letting them go. You just feel really bad. And you lose sleep over it. And you ask friends, you know, how should I do it? What's the best way to do it? And maybe, just maybe, if you're not comfortable enough, you do the wrong thing and delegate it to somebody else, right, to let them go. You hired them, but you let somebody else fire them, right? And, you know, you're so on the money with, you know, you have to remember why you're doing what you're doing, right? So what I learned, because for me, going to another office is a piece of cake, right? Like I would go stand up in a room of 1,000 people and comfortably walk in because it's my personality type. But yeah. I hated letting go of people. I would be up the night before. I'd be nervous. I'd be like, oh my God. And half the time I wouldn't even say what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
And totally. And so I just learned I had to think about my family. I had to think about my wife. I had to think about my children and how hard I worked to build my practice. And that what we were doing wasn't malicious against them. It was protecting my family. It was protecting my kids, my wife, my practice, my rest of my team. And I just learned the more uncomfortable the conversation, the quicker you need to get down to it, right?
Yeah.
Walk in that room and go, hey, Chad, I'm going to be letting you go.
And the more uncomfortable it is, the more it has to happen, or the more it's been coming, you know?
If you're getting into 20 minutes in the conversation and you haven't let them go yet, and I've been there, I've done that. Yeah, we've all been there. You know, you're 20 minutes in. Yeah, how's the family? Things going good? How's the new house? Oh, by the way, I'm letting you go, right? It's like, it's weird. So for everybody out there who heard Chad's message, you know, embrace the uncomfortable conversations. Just do it quickly. You know, walk into a doctor's office and just put your hand out. Don't pussyfoot around it. Just get it. And you're right. You nailed it, man. 100%. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, man, for sure.
I know one of the things we're going to talk about a lot about you, because you're like the international man of mystery. You've got all these really cool things going on. But one of the things that really differentiates you is your love of clinical ortho. And let's be honest, most orthodontists love clinical ortho, but there are those who do it and enjoy what they do. But you really seem to see it as an art, as a true craftsman would see it. Did I get that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that times are changing like a little bit. Like when I came out of residency in 2010, it's just different now in the age of Facebook for young doctors. Like back then, I wanted to be an orthodontist because ortho was badass. I love the aesthetic aspect of it. I love the clinical aspect of it. I love the tinkering aspect of it. I love the before and after aspect of it. And all the faculty that I had were just like these wonderful people that loved ortho, and they also did very well in their business. And I did ortho because I like money. I want to make good money. And I knew that orthodontists did well financially, but I loved ortho. And I think that sometimes that gets lost nowadays in younger orthodontists. You see people getting burnt out, you know, and wanting to transition out of the practice. Or that's kind of a common theme that I've seen online, is that topic will come back and it'll be very popular. And they'll get a lot of comments when an orthodontist is burnt out, or, you know, there's a lot of ways to get burnt out. If it's just about the numbers and just about the business side of orthodontics, if that's what it was like for me, I would freaking get burnt out, man. The clinical side that I love allows me to go through the shit, allows me to go through like what you're talking about, issues with staff, which is never ending. It comes up, it cycles, or issues with frustrations with parents or with, you know, whatever. There's a million things to have frustrations with in practice. But I think that the orthodontist that can also lean on a true love of what we do, you know, whatever that is for you, for me, it's aesthetics. For other doctors, it could be different aspects of treatment. If you have that love for the craft, I think that's hugely important in always having kind of just a keeping a candle burning inside of yourself for something that sustains you through hard times. I think that that's just something that I would tell other orthodontists, is like, if you find yourself getting burnt out of or tired of what we do, try to reconnect with some of that. Take CE in an aspect of orthodontics that you like, or find a mentor, a clinical mentor. You know, I think you can have it both ways, because like I said, I like running a profitable practice that does better than I ever thought it would do, but it wouldn't be enough for me. If that's all it was, I would probably be looking for an eventual exit sooner rather than later if it wasn't for the love of clinical orthodontics. And my experience practicing before I bought my practice, the experience of not having a lot of creative freedom, never having full creative freedom in what I did, in the different associateships, the different corporate jobs. When I had that in my orthodontic practice, I mean, at first when I bought the practice, I was obsessed with lifting it off the ground and making sure that it was going to be financially viable. But the thing that I found when I had full control was, I love doing orthodontics more than I ever thought I would. And that's the one thing that I would never, ever, ever give up. It's like, because I know that's the most important thing to me.
Hello there, orthopreneurs. Sign up for the Orthopreneurs 24 Summit now. We took over an entire ship just for us. And here's the thing. It's selling out so fast right now that the room types are selling out. So if there's a particular type of cabin you want, you better get on to opsummit2024.com right now and sign up. And why are people signing up? Because of three reasons. Number one, it's a boat, which means you can bring your team, your family. Yes, there's a kids club. And yes, there's an adults only pool. Number two, the lineup I have is going to be spectacular. These are not people you're going to see on any other stage anywhere. I dug deep to find the best to help you live your best, most profitable, most productive, personal and practice lives. And they're going to blow you away. And number three, the type of cabin you want is limited. This is not a hotel where most of the rooms are the same. If you want one with a balcony, they're selling out. You want an inside room to save money? They're selling out. So go to opsummit2024.com right now. Sign up for a cruise September 18th to 22nd, and you will have the best CE time of your life. And now, back to the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, you hit so many, like this, if you're a young orthodontist listening to this, or even someone experienced, what you're throwing out there is so much gold. Like, it really is, you're throwing out so much great information, because there are those out there where ortho is merely dollars. And yep. And again, for me, I've been practicing now 32 plus years, right? I think I'm coming up with 32 years this year.
That's crazy, man.
It goes by fast, man. I mean, a lot of it was obviously general dentistry, cosmetic work and stuff. But I graduated dental school in 1992, right? Where many of our listeners were like seven. When my partner, Doug, when I graduated dental school, was 7 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. And best.
You look great, man. You have a real energy for what you do. I mean, it's obvious in everything that you do. So
And I'm a little different than you. And that's why I'm just going to say there's a space out there for everybody, right? And that's something you and I agree on is that, you know, I like clinical ortho, right? If you asked me about restorative dentistry back in 1997, when I was 5 years out of school, I was doubling down on clinical courses like there was no tomorrow. I was finding clinical mentors. I had like 6 clinical mentors. I wanted to be, don't laugh out loud, the finest restorative dentist in the United States. I wanted to be able to put, it's obviously a joke. You can't, there's no ranking, but I wanted to be able to put my cases on a screen in a room full of 1,000 people and let the prosthodontists themselves come up to me and go, where did you do your pros? And later on in life, I had prosthodontists come to me and ask me, where did you do your pros work? And I said, I didn't. I did the School of Hard Knocks. I learned from tons of people. And there comes a point 25, 30 years into practice where the clinical side, you still love it, but the drive, the fire, it physically can't, it's like being a weightlifter for 40 years. You just can't be lifting as hard in the gym. You know, the fire to lift 40 years later or what have you, just can't be the same as day one, but it transitions, it changes.
Yeah.
And that's why Orthopreneurs was started, because I love the idea of mentoring younger docs in a place where I firmly believe that every orthodontist who leaves residency is good enough to do ortho. They can do ortho and not screw people up. They have a lot to learn, but they have almost no business experience. And so for me, mentoring the younger docs is where my social capital is. I love the kind of stuff we're doing now. The conversations we're having make me very, very happy. But if I couldn't find the fulfillment and it was like, oh, let's do Orthopreneurs so I can make money, it would show through, and B, I'd be miserable.
Yeah. And both are important, man. Like you have to, I forget the saying, but it's like you have to do well to do good. You know, like in my practice, I have to do the clinical that I really want to do on a scale that I want to do it. My business has to do well. You know, when my business does well, I'm not worried month to month. If it's a little up month, a little down month, I can see a case where it's like a grandma bringing a kid in because the parents died, and I can be like, we're taking care of your treatment fee, or a foster kid or something like that. I can do more good because my practice does well. And so I can't neglect, even with my love for clinical orthodontics, I can have it both ways. Like I'm a person who loves money. I'm a person who loves doing wonderful things with my family. But if I didn't, I focus on the business aspect of my practice too. And if I didn't do that, I might not have the same, you know, my ability to really do the things creatively on the clinical side that I want to do wouldn't be the same for me.
Yeah, it's true. You know, you practice long enough, you get some great stories. And I worked, and this is a great story. Maybe one day when I'm on someone else's podcast, I'll tell the story in detail. But I used to work, my third job out of dental school was working for 2 doctors who ultimately were found guilty of felony fraud and served time. And I worked for them. But one thing they did every single day, and you can't do this in ortho because it would get too expensive. And because of the price of what we do, it would ruffle a lot of feathers. But what they did is every day in the morning meeting, they told the team, to the treatment coordinator, really, you need to give away one free thing today. You need to do something for free today, right? Someone gets a filling done. When it's all done, they come up front and say, nope, this one's on Dr. So-and-so, right? Mm-hmm. And just surprise them, make their day. Now, it's hard to give away a free ortho case every single day, right? You know, you get your other patients who are paying kind of upset if word ever got back. And not everybody is needy. But the value of doing good by when you're doing well is so important, which is why I tell people, if you're a young orthodontist, and I'd love your feedback on this, Chad, I think when you get out of ortho residency, the number one place you need to be spending time is running a successful business. You're going to do good ortho, but you better take a gazillion courses on leadership, management, become the leader you need to become the manager you need to become, develop the systems and the policies and to get the coaches and the consultants, self-serving, but come to the Orthopreneur Summit where you're going to meet orthodontists and learn about the business side of ortho. Because like you just said, if you can get a running start on running a productive practice, that allows you to take a step back and say, now I'm going to be the best orthodontist on the planet. I'm going to take, because I can afford the courses. I've been taught how to take the time out of the office to go take a week and follow Dr. X, Y, or Z in their office, or take that course. You know, I'm going to go down to Barcelona.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Luis and Diego over in Barcelona, the land of skinny jeans and cigarettes, where they'll teach you how to do aligner cases like you've never seen in your life, but you can't get there. When, like, a young ortho just reached out to me. He's like, oh, here are all the people I'm taking this year. And I'm like, every one of those are amazing courses for, and I said, for 5 years from now or for 3 years from now. I said, because you need to learn how to run a practice and become profitable so that you can actually start implementing the things you want to do without it hurting your bottom line. I don't know if you agree or disagree with that.
Totally agree. When I bought my practice in 2016, my first few months, like Clark Jones, amazing orthodontist, was with me for a year, but he was still seeing patients. My first 3 months, I was in the upstairs part of our office, just like trying to unbundle things that had gotten kind of on cruise control or understanding systems of collection and insurance billing and all this other stuff I'd never done in corporate practice or anything. And I'm just like upstairs, like in tears sometimes, like trying to like learn on the fly. And so it was all about running a practice for me initially when I bought that practice. And then the ability to kind of get that under control then gave me the ability to kind of focus on other things. But I had to kind of right the ship at first. And that was really important. And me starting to track cases and take photograph cases came from 2016 when Clark and I went to the AAO. Clark had a relationship with Tony Zakim, who owned RMO at the time.
I love Tony. He threw the best RMO parties ever.
You know what? I was supposed to have lunch with Tony today. And I had to call him and be like, Tony, I forgot, man. Like, I have a podcast with Glenn at noon. And he said, oh, my God, tell Glenn I said hi.
You remember
me? We rescheduled the next week. But, like, the first AAO in 2016, I approached them, and I was business-minded. I was like, I bought this practice. I need to, you know, the practice was, like, 65% overhead, the practice I bought. And you know, it wasn't a huge practice. And I went to Tony, and I was like, listen, you have a new bracket coming out. Clark had used Damon brackets forever, but then he didn't. He was the first Damon guy in Arizona. And he started putting twins on the incisors because he didn't like the control of Damon at the time. So I said, Clark, I'm going to go to RMO. They have a new self-ligating bracket come out. So I approached Tony. I had a sit-down meeting with Tony. I had a sit-down meeting with like a couple other self-ligating bracket companies too, but they were just like, you know, who's this young guy? Like, you just want to, Tony took me seriously. And I was like, Tony, I'll track cases with your bracket. I'll take lots of photos. And like, just give me a discount on your bracket, man. Like I just give me that and I'm willing to track cases. And they ended up using some of my photographs and some of my cases in their like marketing of that bracket. It was called an altitude bracket. And so that was kind of the start for me. It was a business thing at first. I just wanted to, you know, a discount on my inventory somewhat, but then I started tracking cases and I enjoyed doing that. And so from that, I started, you know, posting and doing certain things. And I had my relationship with RMO, but the thing I liked about Tony and RMO, there's different kinds of KOLs. And the way that I would differentiate it is like, typically there are two kinds. There is the KOL that is a shill for the company, where everything is about the company. It's company, company, company. Everything is about the product. And then there's another kind of KOL, and that is an orthodontic clinician who's a champion. And some companies want a champion. They'll see somebody who does good work and they'll be like, I want you to do good work. Use my golf club and just play good golf, you know? And that's the company that you know, the only company that I would try to work with. And Tony was like that. I never had to, like, it was never product first. They gave me opportunity just to speak and to travel and to do things that I liked. But I never, you know, in all my posts on Orthopreneurs or Pearls, you know, I can count on one hand the time I mention the name of a bracket or the name of a company. And I work with a different company. I work with Dynaflex now, but they're the same way. It's very family oriented. And it's the latter of those two KOL situations, you know. And for me, it's not fun if I can't be creative and talk about what I want to talk about. If it's like Kool-Aid and it's like you have to walk this line, you can't paint outside the lines, then it's just not fun. Because the reality is, like, people don't know about, like, people may have assumptions of KOLs and things like that. The far majority of them that are really, like, you know, doing, tracking a lot of cases and presenting, it's not that profitable compared to what you can do in your private practice. So for me, it's like, it's a creative exercise. And if it's not that, if if it can't be creative, like, if I can't do things the way that I want to do, then I want no part of it. So
agreed. And it's not that it's not far more profitable. It's not profitable at all.
No, people
see it. When I speak for a lot of companies, generally for me nowadays, my talks are more about business. They're more about rah, 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 get teams excited, get people rowing in the same direction, get people focused on a mission, and really trying to breed that positive attitude where we work with each other and develop teams. But when I did speak for Shine on the motion appliance, the real benefit was I was documenting every case meticulously with photos, because you never knew that one case that could just be incredible or turn out horribly. So you wanted to track it from the beginning. And I found myself pushing the envelope because I wanted to see what we were capable of doing, which was awesome. And best of all, you get to see your successes and your failures up front, nice and big. And I was never afraid to share my failures, because it wasn't a failure. It's just something that didn't work. And I learned what didn't work here. And totally. I can tell you that experience, people see you on stage and say, wow, look how glamorous. Yeah, you have 102 fever and you've got to get on a plane to go lecture because a room is waiting for you. And you can't say you're not going. That's really glamorous. But when you get off that stage and you look at your slides and you go back to clinic, right, when you've been presenting on a giant screen and you can see what everybody sees as a success, and you can see up close the places you could have done it better, it really does make you a better clinician. And
it makes it so much more personal. And like I did an aesthetics course in Scottsdale this last weekend with Tito Norris came out, who's somebody that I respect a lot. And every time you show your case, and it could be cases that I've shown before, someone will ask a question or someone will point something out. And like the lessons that you learn, most people don't really look back on their cases, and that's the best way of learning. But when I post or anything, you know, I'm sharing something that is very personal to me, this treatment of this, you know, it's imperfect, but it's very personal. And so when you get those learning lessons there, like online, if somebody critiques, and criticism is a great thing, but you will never take them more personal than if it's something that you share like that. And by taking it personal, you learn from it. Like those the cases that I've presented and the questions that I've had or the feedback that I've gotten, there is no better learning tool for me. And it really forms my thought process looking forward at other cases. It's a crazy, crazy thing. And the thing that I told orthodontists in the audience this weekend was, if you can, you don't have to get on a stage. You don't have to, you know, posting online is very vulnerable. You don't have to do that. But if you can find a study group, or you can find another orthodontist where you guys like share cases and outcomes and pick it apart, you will become, that's just the fast track to becoming really, really, really good at what you're wanting to do clinically. So it's like this, it's like a cheat code, man. It's a hard process, and it's very vulnerable, and it sucks at times. And like you talk about it not being profitable, people don't even know how long it takes to like filter and crop your photos, block the eyes out, right? Yep. It is such a, when you see a post or you see a presentation given, the time that is behind the scenes and doing that is freaking intense, man.
Yeah, it is.
So it's like the people that are doing that, like really, really have a passion for it, you know, and it's fun for me.
I don't think it's unreasonable to say that, you know, nobody's ever gotten the formula down pat, but I would say for me, when I give a lecture, a presentation of any kind, if it's clinically based, I'm not talking like rah-rah team stuff, I'm talking like clinically based, it's at least a 10-to-1 ratio for every minute you see me on stage and how many minutes I spend, right? If you see me for an hour, I would go more than 10, maybe 15 or 20. If you see me on stage for an hour, I probably spent 20 hours on that presentation, including cropping photos, including blurring faces, or, you know, just thinking up how do we want the story to evolve? What messages are we trying to get across? It is definitely not as glamorous and definitely not as profitable as people think it is. And I know you and I agree on that. We could do this all day long. But what I do want to jump to is Orthotown, right? What's your technical title at Orthotown?
Editorial director of Orthotown.
Editorial director.
Yeah. So,
and that's just a manifestation or an extension, if you will, of your love of clinical ortho, right? Because you're out there. The two things I really respect about you is, number one, how you just put yourself out there with cases. You're always happy to put your cases on Orthopreneurs and Pearls and show people, you know, hey, this is what I did. You know, what can we learn from this particular case? How can we get better because of this case? And you mentioned that, you know, it's very personal when you look at your own cases. And there are jackwads out there who take it really personally when they look at other people's cases, right? Yeah. And you've been really good. You've been really good at engaging with, you know, the haters who are afraid to put their stuff online, but are very eager to jump on other people's stuff.
Right. It's just the nature of that, that platform. It's kind of like if an alien came down from the sky and they wanted to find out what human beings were like, if they went into a Facebook online forum and they were judging what human beings are like based on interactions on a Facebook forum, like an orthodontic where records are being discussed or something like that, they'd be like, humans are pretty like, you know, they'd probably have a judgment of humans that is not, you know, it's not how you and I would talking to each other. It's just a very unique platform. You know that you run one of those sites, but sometimes you see the worst, but like, I talk about criticism and how it's a really good thing. Really, it has shaped me. So, I mean, I owe a lot of thanks to you and to the guys that run the Pearl site for having those available, because just through early interest, just wanting to show certain things and learn certain things, going through that, having done it a lot, it's made me a better clinician, but it's made me a better person too. I'm much more tolerant. I am humble because I know my cases are imperfect and I approach them that way, but it also fuels me from a student perspective. Like, I want to learn, I want to get better faster. So it's such a unique, and there's so many things I love about posting online. I think it's the best forum. Like, I can do a presentation, I can write an article, but nothing is more interactive than really hashing out a case or a discussion online. Like, there's no holds bar. All opinions are welcome. It's not an echo chamber. You're not getting some controlled environment. It's phenomenal, man. It's a beautiful thing. And then you also just have to accept the reality, which is that there are people who let their lesser side shown online by kind of acting like, you know, acting like jerks to each other.
Yeah.
And that's just the way that it is. But through doing that online, that came the opportunity for Orthotown, because Dan Grob was the editor of Orthotown. And then I think it was like 2020, I wrote an article for Orthotown, and then he called me like a couple weeks after it came out. And when he called me, I saw his phone coming through. I don't know why, but I was like, he wants me to work with Orthotown. I don't know before I answered it. And then he said, hey, would you ever consider, I'm going to step down being the editor. And I told him, I was like, oh my God, man, I just became a father and my practice is growing. And I'm like posting once a week online and that's good enough for me. But then I just, you know, I thought about it and I called him back like a week later and I said yes to it. Because I figured if I was terrible at it or it was a real headache, then, you know, I quit after a year. But it ended up being a lot of fun. I love writing. I didn't know how much I'd love writing, but I love the process of putting your thoughts into words, like taking your thoughts and then crafting them into words and making a point and telling a story. Clinically, it's really cool. But then I also talk about kind of outside the box things, and it's very therapeutic for me. For trying to wrap my hands around what's going on in my mind and craft it into words. It's a really fun thing. And I get to have other people like yourself or other people that I look up to in the industry. I get to invite them to like share more or to, you know, I get to be a cheerleader. I'm like, you know, I get to cheerlead people that I'm a huge fan of. And that's fun too.
I'm really humbled and honored that you asked me. I'm sorry. Mea culpa, Chad. I haven't contributed as well as I should. Let this podcast
it's you and everybody else, man. It's you and everybody else. Like, we have, none of us are, I think it's like an orthodontic trait or something. I think that orthodontists are great people. They're very, I get it. It's the same with everybody. You know, deadlines, and the magazine's used to it. They're all like, deadlines get pushed back, and I'm the same way. Like, I'm constantly missing my deadlines and I'm just hoping to not get fired because I'm having fun. But me too.
In my former life, I was clinical editor of the Seattle Study Club Journal for a couple of years back in the day. And it was a blast. It was fun. I had a good time. But yeah, deadlines and getting stuff. And so I should be more cognizant of it. And I appreciate your understanding. I will get you more stuff.
I wasn't even aware of that, to be honest.
Well, it doesn't matter. It's me, not you, right? The old line. Yeah. But you know, as we start winding it down here, there's some real wisdom again in everything you're saying. You know, social media is, in my opinion, by the way, a quick aside, I asked two friends of mine who are, you know, just two of the smartest human beings I've ever met in my life, One is a chief scientist of a company. Brilliant dude, right? PhD, not whole nine yards, from a really prestigious university. And both of them at the same moment, when I said, what's the worst technology ever created? Both said email, right? Both at the exact same moment, both said email. I said, really? Combined with, like, you'd have to post a letter, it would take forever. But both of them, both genuinely believed that email was the worst thing created. But there are many out there who believe social media is, right? And I disagree. I think it, as you talked about it, today's younger clinicians face a real problem. Today's younger society face a huge problem because, like you said, 15 years ago, it was very different. Nowadays, if you're a clinician, you have to adhere to a few rules. You can post only your greatest cases all the time. They have to be your best cases because God forbid you post bad cases, right? You got to post your best stuff. You need to edit it in such a way that nobody sees the stuff in the case that isn't ideal because maybe it looks amazing from the occlusal, but from the anterior, it doesn't look great. You have to be really, really quiet when people criticize you and be humble and kind. You know, much of this is being sarcastic and facetious, right? But at the end of the day, people are living lives on social media that we all know by now. We all know that 99% of what you see on social media is total garbage. It's total BS. The picture of the mother and the child sitting on the bench having just such a joyous Sunday morning eating breakfast together was preceded by 3 hours of screaming, yelling, fighting, chasing around the house. You know, that one moment picture probably was not worth all the screaming and yelling that went on to get that one picture because they're afraid to show the imperfections of their lives. And for orthodontists, and this is my soapbox moment, Chad, so thank you for letting me have it for a minute. You know, my soapbox moment is, and I've been saying it from the stage, and I've had people write me really, really nice emails and messages about it and saying thank you, is that if you're an orthodontist or a professional or you're a parent, you're living, quite honestly, you might be living your worst life because of social media. You might be trying to reach an ideal that doesn't exist clinically in your life right now or practice-wise that might not fit your practice or parenting life because you don't need to leave your practice at 5 o'clock to go run home and take care of your kids so you can appear to be a better parent or live up to the ideal that you believe is what a good parent is based on social media. And the statistics bear out that the generation now, your generation, is spending more time with kids than any generation in history has spent with children. Mm-hmm. But here's the kicker. When polled, the overwhelming majority of parents still believe they're not spending enough time with their kids. Yeah. And that's the social media effect. The fact that every picture that my friends post is about them and their kids, I don't even know what they like anymore because all I see is pictures of them with their kids. And I'm begging everybody out there, get off the treadmill, pick up some hobbies, put your oxygen mask on before you put that on of anybody else's, take care of yourself. Self-care matters a huge amount. And when it comes to your practice, do what feels right in your heart and follows your plan and don't follow somebody else's ideal. And I'm getting off the podium. Sorry there, Chad.
No, that was awesome, man. And I agree. Social media is a comparison machine. And comparison is like, you know, comparison can be the cause of a lot of problems, not enoughness, et cetera, et cetera. But that's a main, it's kind of like you need, when I'm on social media, I try to be very intentional. How much time I'm spending on it? What am I doing there? What am I thinking when I'm seeing certain things or what's my purpose? I try to be intentional on social media because it's just, and we have talks on our team about it too. I mean, it's a major part of everyone's everyday life now.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And so maybe that would make a good article for Orthotown for me to write.
It definitely would, man.
I'll write that article. That's the article I will write, is put your oxygen mask on first. Because I see, not just me, but sociologists, therapists, see a looming crisis 10, 15 years from now. Yeah. And all these parents
people are crafting their lives around things that is not reality. And it fuels, I suffer from not enoughness at times. And at times that's my drive, you know, throughout my course of going through dental school. When I bought my practice, I didn't think I was enough. I was like, the orthodontists out here, they all have it down. Everybody has it down. How am I going to compete? I'm not enough to do that. When in reality, yes, you can. the reality is, no, they don't have it all down.
No, they don't.
You know, and like in dental school, I was fueled by fear. I didn't want to be a dentist. I wanted to be an orthodontist. So it was that fueled me that I don't think I'm enough. I'm not enough to, you know, compete in dental school and get one of those rare spots in orthodontic residency. And something that I shared with my team, actually, we're reading a book called The Gifts of Imperfection by Brené Brown. It's a really good book. We have like a book club in our office that meets once a week. I told them a story that came from dental school. So basically in dental school, I was, you know, my first couple of years, I was, you know, just a nerd. I just wanted to be an orthodontist. I was driven by a fear of not being enough. So at times I will drive and overachieve from that place of like not enoughness. And so in my dental school, I was a really good student. I had the best board score in our class. It was all driven out of fear. I didn't have any friends in dental school. I just studied constantly studied. And when I was like my third year in dental school, someone wrote an email, and I wish I still had this email, but basically it was like a burn email. So back then you could copy and paste the entire class, all four of the entire class. So it was 144 students in each class. And so like 600 people, and all the faculty, every faculty at USC was on this email. So when I tell you it was 1,000 people, it was like easily 1,000 people. It was like my world. This email was to everyone in my world, because my world was dental school. And it basically said, it was an email kind of like ripping certain faculty, saying how the school sucked, saying like, you know, stuff that this person wasn't happy with. And at the end, it was signed from Chad Foster, AKA I Kiss Ass to Get Into Orthodontic Residency. And I swear I told my team that, and I was like, man, one of my only regrets is not having that email, because I would love to just, at the time I hated it. At the time it was like, that email was like a sucker punch. If you've ever been sucker punched before, it's not the punch that hurts. It's like the after effect of that. There's no justice. There's no anything. And this went out to everyone in my world. And most people in dental school, they didn't know me. They might know me as the guy who was a really good student or performs well on tests or just is always constantly studying. But now they have this impression of me, you know, and I worried about what that was going to do to me. I didn't care, you know, I don't care what people think, but then I also don't want people to have a perception of me that's not true, especially at USC if I wanted to go to residency there. And when I was in residency and I interviewed at USC, I got the vibe from the students that were there that they knew of this. You know, they knew of my reputation before I came in. And to be honest with you, I never stepped on anybody in dental school. You know, you can get the reputation of being like a gunner, you know, someone who is out to get what they want at the expense of others. And that was never my thing. My thing was, I'm going to study my ass off and I'm going to perform on tests and things like that. And that's what I did. But I basically had to tell, when I interviewed with Dr. Sam Hashim at USC, I had to bring up the email. I was like, hey, just to let you know, this is the place that I want to come. I think that people might have a misconception of me. I'm just a really hardworking person. And he basically told me, if anybody wants, there's nobody that could keep you out of this program if you wanted to come here based on your resume. And so I was like, okay, cool. But literally, that's what I was worried about from that email. And I had to live with that. And it was a really tough thing at the time for me. I really like, you know, it didn't make my day to day any harder, but just the fact that I could be mischaracterized that way in front of my world of the dental school, where most people don't know Chad Foster. They don't know me. They just know me as some guy that studies a lot. And that was rough, but it really shaped me, because it gave me a feeling of, I've been mischaracterized and I've been judged before. So for me going through that, and it was traumatic at the time, for me going through that, I am a lot less likely to judge or mischaracterize somebody else. And like, having gone through that, if someone online mischaracterizes me or judges me, I don't care. I've been through worse. I've been through much, much, much worse. And so it was just like, it was really, the email was really a gift. At the time, it kind of put me in hell. And I was in hell anyways. And it was, you know, nobody, it was written by another dental student, I'm sure. Nobody in dental school is happy. Nobody in my dental school was happy. We were all miserable. It sucked. You're just under a tremendous amount of stress and pressure. And that's just what it was, man. But it was a real gift for me, looking back. Like it shaped me for sure.
Right on. You know, I'm sorry you had to go through that. It's terrible, but hey, your life turned out okay. things are going all right, you know, and thankfully, you know, people understood and that was that. And there's an old saying, you can't change what happens to you, but you can change how you react. And we've all been there, man. I remember when I logged on to Match on December 1st and didn't get into ortho residency. I mean, I didn't think it was fair, but that's life. You move on. You either reapply and work your whole your whole life around that, or you give up and never become an ortho. And that wasn't an option for me. And kudos to you for picking yourself up off the ground and dealing with that and moving on. And
people deal with worse things, man. You know, it was just an email. People deal with worse things, but it's something that you deal with all the day. And when I raise my kids, I want them to be able to, you know, deal with reality and bend themselves around reality to deal with situations that they don't like.
Yeah. And nobody died from the email, but as someone said to me once, it's not nothing. Right? Nobody died, but it's not nothing.
Yeah.
And you got through it, man. And now I just want to say thank you as we're done here almost. It's thank you for being who you are. Thank you for doing what you do. Thank you for driving the profession forward, which crystal clear because of your love of clinical ortho. There are personalities out there who are driving the profession forward, and you can see why they're doing it on their sleeve from a mile away. That are not as pure, and let them do their thing, right? Like whatever they do, they do. But you're doing it the right way for the right reasons. And it's so crystal clear to all of us. And just, I'm so thankful that you're doing what you're doing, man.
From the bottom of my heart. I really appreciate that, man. That means a lot to me, especially coming from you, man. You're a huge giver in our profession as well. And it's fun, man. We live blessed lives. It's like, I just want, I don't need more and more and more in my life. I just want Groundhog Day. Like I want to wake up tomorrow with the same blessings that I have today. Totally 100%, man. That's all I want. I just want lots of Groundhog Days.
Yeah. I told my chiropractor I visited earlier today. I said to him, I said, every day I wake up cognizant and thankful for the blessings that are showering me every single day. And I don't take them for granted. I appreciate every one of them. And I just want to give back that much more to the people around me because of how blessed I am. And I think the word blessed is overused. I really mean it. I think life is just amazing, knock on wood, and it won't be amazing forever, but right now it is. And I try to revel in that and enjoy it. And I'll leave you with this because I tell this to all the young doctors. When life is amazing, just know it won't always be that way. But conversely, when life sucks, it won't always be that way. It's going to get better, right? And I think owning businesses for decades allows you to understand that things are never as good as they seem and they're never as bad as they seem, right?
I try to remember that all the time. That's great advice.
Well, just have a great day. Keep up the great work and just say thank you, man, from the bottom of my heart.
You too, buddy. I'm going to take my son to the Phoenix Children's Museum. It's going to be a fantastic day.
Right on. Enjoy it.